good afternoon, and bring you Christian greetings in Christ's precious name. Brought probably too many papers up here, but it's kind of my thing. If I get done saying what I have, I can start reading to you. But we'll see once where the Lord takes us all this afternoon. I want to say to the young people, first of all, thank you for coming. I know it's probably not the main subject on your agenda. I thought about that a little bit, and I thought, you know, I don't know where yous are at as far as courtship, marriage, that type of thing. But when you get married and you take two people and put their things together to one, then you need a will, because if something happens to you, you need to disperse of that. And that's what we're going to be looking at. We're going to be looking at transferring estate finances. But the early part of that, I want to look at the importance of a will. And we'll go through a little bit of that. And I just brought, I'm going to just read a small article here about the question is asked, does a young person or single person need a will or power of attorney? And you can put young married in there or whatever you want to put in there. And the answer is yes. Even if the extent of your estate is several hundred dollars and an inexpensive vehicle, those assets are subject to probate. So you say, well, I don't have much. There isn't much. And that's not what estate finances and transferring and wills and all that is all about. Just if there's a large amount, that's not the issue. According to the state, says if you die without a will, the court will have to appoint an executor to handle your estate, even if it is just a several hundred dollars. Some states require a bond to be posted by your executor. The court will decide distribution according to the laws of intestate succession without your input. Your loved ones will have a stack of paperwork to handle on your behalf, and it could cost more to distribute your estate than your estate is worth. Not having a will increases the stress, cost, and workload involved in dispersing even a very simple, very small estate. When a young person goes into voluntary service, say overseas or somewhere, they often leave bank accounts, personal property, vehicles behind. Such assets can be handled very efficiently and simply through a one-page will. A power of attorney or POA, especially for healthcare decisions, should also be given to those you trust, such as parents, when unexpected tragedies, disabilities, or accidents occur. A power of attorney can help your loved ones make the best decisions for you. So I thought I'd just read that in the beginning here. You asked the question, does this really affect me? And the answer is, yes, it does. So thinking about transferring estate and finances, I heard the comment from someone that it's easier to start a business than it is to know how to transition or sell it. And that's pretty true. It's easier, less involved, because there's not much involved. So it's easier to start a business than it is to know how to transition or sell it. I want to give a disclaimer here in the beginning so that I do not do legal work. We are not allowed to do legal work as advisors. We can only give advice, and you need to work with an attorney to do the legal work. And then another thing that goes along with a subject like this is sometimes people, you may go away from here and you'll only hear what you want to hear, and the rest of it you'll block out. And that tendency is there as well. So now let's go to Psalm 50. I'm going to read a few verses here. And Psalm 50, I'm going to read verses 10, 11, and 12. Psalm 50, 11. I know all the fowls of the mountains and the wild beasts of the field are mine. If I were hungry, I would not tell thee, for the world is mine and the fullness thereof. Will I eat the flesh? I started one verse late and I was going one verse late. Let's start over. Verse 10. For every beast of the forest is mine and the cattle upon a thousand hills. I know all the fowls of the mountains and the wild beasts of the field are mine. If I were hungry, I would not tell thee. For the world is mine and the fullness thereof. Just a few comments there, thinking about the earth and the things that are in the earth and the things that we have, that we are stewards of. You know, the Lord said it's all His. And Psalm 24:1 says pretty much the same thing. The earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof, the world and they that dwell therein. And I think we all understand that this afternoon, that God is the owner of all. And we acknowledge that. We are but stewards or managers of that for the owner. We are here being stewards or managers for God's glory. It has nothing to do with bringing glory to ourselves. God is the owner of all, and we are but His stewards to bring Him glory and to do His will. We talked about that, our devotional leader talked about that the other night. Stewardship involves understanding God's purpose for mankind in this world and our role in fulfilling that purpose. I believe stewardship affects our relationship with God and man. Transferring our estate or our finances will affect relationships. This afternoon, that word will. They will affect relationships. Our goal is, as we work with wills and as we look at transferring estate today, is to that we can have the good relationships when that's all over. And that can be done. But if nothing is done, it will affect relationships. It's not about hoarding resources for our personal benefit. That's not what we're trying to do. We're not trying to transfer estate so that we can hoard things. Sometimes that issue can show up that way, that we just transfer from one generation to the next, and we never take and give to the Lord. And we want to talk about that as well. So we are to make wise use of the resources that God has entrusted into our care for the kingdom of heaven. Just a couple other references I'll refer to here. Ecclesiastes 9:10, the first part of that verse says, whatsoever thy hand findeth to do, do it with thy might. I think we are to be diligent as we are stewards of the things that God has entrusted into our care. We are to be diligent. We are to use the abilities that God has given, to use them to His honor and to His glory. And He says to do it with all thy might. I don't think we should be haphazard and doing our best. But I think we need to do it with our might and do it diligently. 1 Corinthians 10:26, for the earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof. And then Genesis 2:15, God put man into the garden to dress it and to take care of it. And we are still in the garden today. That's what we are to do today. We are to do the same. Now, thinking about transferring, I'm going to ask a few questions here, and then I won't necessarily give answers to them. We'll look at them later in the message. But some of the things we want to look at is transferring your farm or your business. And I think the hardest step in that is to knowing what to do. What do you do? How? Well, I think my advice to you would be is simply get started. It's a work in progress. It's not a once and done. It's not the thing where you get everything filled out right and then you're good for the next 20 years. I don't think that's the hardest step is just to get started. You know, we procrastinate. We put it off because we're not sure what to do. We're not sure who to appoint executive. We're not sure who to transition the business onto. So some of the questions we need to ask ourselves is when? When do we start to transition? Probably sooner than later. I'll give some illustrations later of those in their 80s and 89 and older people that hadn't started. How do you do this? Well, you can get advice. You can read a lot of things, but you should get an attorney to help you. Who are we going to transition it to? Are we going to transition it to our oldest son or our sons or an employee or an in-law? Or who are we going to transition it to? And then we also need to talk about how much. How much should we let to be divided up to the children? There's a lot of different thoughts on that. I want to say one thing, that one size does not fit all. This afternoon, I'll have things say different things that will not fit your situation at all. And there is no one, you do step one, two, three, and four, and then it's done. It doesn't work quite that way. So I think it's a thing that we need to work on. It's a transition that is over a period of years. So one of the first things, the first steps is you need a will. What about trusts? What about revocable trusts that can change? What about irrevocable trusts? I'm sure some of you are probably involved in some of them. Some irrevocable trusts, they save more taxes, and that's why they're used some. But then there's also the downside on that, on some of them trusts. I don't have a lot of experience with trusts. There was a widow who I worked with, who then her husband had set up some trusts, and then she wanted to undo them. They were trusts that could be revocable trusts. But there is place for some trusts when it comes to providing for handicapped children, or special needs children, or a spouse, and there can be some things, there is places for some of that. So I don't want to discount all that, but for some people it's a right thing and for others it's not. So let's look at creating a will. So what all is needed in creating a will? Turn to James. James chapter 4. We'll just look at a couple verses there. James 4 verses 13 through 15. Verse 13 of James 4 says, "Go to now, ye that say, today or tomorrow, we will go into such a city and continue there a year and buy and sell and get gain. Whereas ye know not what shall be on the morrow, for what is your life? It is even a vapor that appeareth for a little time and then vanishes away. For that ye ought to say, if the Lord will, we shall live and do this or that." Life is short at its longest. Life is short as we think about, you know, in the light of eternity, the light of, you know, to God, 1,000 years is as one day. So I had figured that out one time for the students at Bible school. How long is 70 years? In the eyes of God, I think it was just a couple hours or minutes. It wasn't very long at all. 70 years wasn't a long period of time. May have been a couple hours. I'm not sure. But life is short. And here in James, he's telling us, we don't know. We don't know what's going to be tomorrow. We don't know how long we will be here. We don't know if we'll be 70. For some, it's a lot shorter than that. And for some, it's a number of years after that. But what he's telling us here, I think, is we need to be saying, according to the Lord's will, we will do this and that. But as a steward of the things that God has entrusted into our care, we need to create a will. So what is a will, anyhow? What do we think about when we think about a will? Well, a will is simply a legal document that helps you put your affairs in order. A will is a desire, a bequest, instruction, or last wish. So that's what the will is all about. It's our desire. What do we want to happen when God calls us out of this life? What do we want to happen with the things that he has entrusted into our care? If we don't decide that, if we don't give any direction, what's to be done, why the state will take care of it. And it will not usually be the way that we would have wanted it to be. So so it's our desire. What do we want to happen? It's instruction. What's the biggest hindrance to having a will is simply procrastination. We make excuses. I don't know how. I'm young. I don't know what is included. So let's look at a few steps to take and that it needs to include. Number one, I would suggest that you use an attorney to help write up a will. Now, can you take a piece of paper and write on the back what you want and date it and say, this is my last will and testament, and this is what I want to happen, and sign it and get somebody to witness, and will that stand? Yes, that will stand. But there may be things that you did not think of, and it's not all that expensive to have a will made up. Start simple. Start simple with it. Just simply get a few of the main things done. So it's not really that expensive. I would recommend that you use an attorney to do that. For $150, $250 or so, you can write up a simple will. They make more money when they have to help settle your will. The attorneys, they want to be involved there. I think a will needs to be updated. Update your will often. Start with keeping it simple, like I said. Just take care of the simple things, and then update it every 5 years or whatever. You know, there'll be times in your life when it's more important to keep updating as there's more children, as children are born into the home. And that's number two. One of the most important reasons to have a will is to name a guardian for your minor children. And then keep updating as children are added. Select a guardian. Select someone that you know will portray or shares the same spiritual values that you have. Discuss it with a guardian. Let them know that you have put them, that you want to put them on your will, and get their permission to do that. There may be things that come up in their life in a couple years down the road that you will want to change who that guardian is, and let them know when that changes, or, you know, whether it's more children. So that is one of the main things that a will does, and that is to take care of your minor children. Our children are, of course, all older now, so we don't need the guardians for them. Number three is name executors. Name executors that will carry out your wishes. Now, you say, well, I'm young. Who are my executors? Well, they can be a close family member. It needs to be somebody that's of age, of course. Can be your dad. Can be your uncle. You know, someone you have confidence in and that you would put on as your executor. As you get older, your sons are older, and your children are of age. You can, of course, a lot of times you name your sons to be your executors. So a close family member or some of your children. I'm going to give a few illustrations, a few things that I was involved in over the years. And I'll try not to give any names, and it's no use you try to figure out who I'm talking about, because I won't just do one example, and it's probably not from the state you live in anyhow. And it's from a variety of people and a variety of situations. But there was an older man I'll give this in a way a little bit, but he was in our church. So if you want to go back and get our old date books from 20 years ago, maybe you can pick it out. But he was an older man, and he ended up in a home, and his children were they were scattered a little here and there. Anyhow, he was getting to the age where he could no longer, he didn't always make sense, and yet there were things from the past that he knew very clearly what he wanted and what he wanted done. And we got to the point where, of course, he no longer drove. He was in the home, and the children wanted to take his vehicle and a couple other things and pass it on. They want to sell it and things like that, or transfer the title into one of their names. And so the children had an attorney that they were using. And that attorney had called me and said that on such and such a day, we're going down to the home, and we're going to get this man to transfer the title into one of the children's names. And he said, "I'd like you to be there." He said, "You can." So I went down to the home. I met him out in the waiting room there, and he told me a little bit what they're going to do. They're going to go back, and they're going to talk to him and two of the children. And he said he understands that they may have a problem. Well, they went back, and they talked a while, and they came out, and they said they can't get him to sign anything. He just won't listen to them. They said, "We believe you're the only person that can tell them what to do." So he said, "We want you to go along back, and we want you to talk to him." So I went back, and I talked to him alone, and told him a little bit what they want to do. He had all kinds of other ideas of what they were trying to do because he didn't understand. And so anyhow, to make a long story short, he did agree to sign the title, and they signed the title over. It was the right thing to do, but he wasn't going to trust his children. The attorney knew that he just kept saying, "Well, I want to talk to David. I want to talk to David." So we had, sometimes you get called into situations like that. Number four. In your will, include provision for long-term health care for you and your spouse. You don't know who's going to die when, who's going to die first, who's going to need what complications are going to come along, what special needs are going to be needed. So you want to make provision for long-term health care in your will. You should have a living will. You should sign a document as far as being hooked up to what your wishes are as far as being hooked up to life support. But take into consideration any special needs that may come up in the family members. And that's where trusts and things can come into play. Number five, another thing you want to take care of in your will is the charitable part of the gifts that you want to give to charity. What a part of your estate do you want to go to charity, and to what charities? And you can list charities, or you can let the charities up to your executors. But I always say that use a percentage when you are deciding how much to give to charity. Don't say you want to give so many thousand or whatever. It's better to say you give 20 or 30% or 40% or, you know, maybe you want to give 80% of it, whatever that is, to charities. And it can be put in, it can be put into to a AAF or CAM or different places where they can hold it, and then your executors can have time to distribute it to charities. So I think it's good to let them know what some of them charities are, your church, and what different things you supported throughout your lifetime that you want to be supported in your will. Number six, if there are any household goods, personal items, or family heirlooms that you want certain family members to have, make sure to name the item and the family member. It is a way to, if there are certain things that you want passed on to family members, whoever that may be, why list them and put them in your will. Number seven, say how you want the balance divided up to your children. And that is after charity has been taken care of, after these other things have been taken care of, how your charities are taken care of, and then how you want it to be divided up. And that's after the last to die. Do you want to divide it up equally? Or is there something else that you want? And we'll talk about that here in a little bit. And how much? How much should be given to your children? So that's a will. There, it's simple, but just start and take care of, just answer the simple questions, because it takes care of a lot of issues. If you you can, I'm sure CM has it too, but Anabaptist Financial has the will organizer that you can use, and it goes through there and asks you all the questions, and you just simply, you know, answer them questions. You want a lot of that stuff answered before you get to the attorney. All the attorney needs to do is take care of the legal part of it, make sure all the legal things are done. But as far as who, what, when, and where, why, you want a lot of them answers done on ahead. Okay, the next part is business transition plan. Question that I have here in the beginning, why is business succession planning important? It's more than just to pass on your estate. You know, there's a significant amount of, there's a significant percentage of family-owned businesses that fail to survive into the second generation of owners, and then even a larger percentage that fail to survive into the third generation. Going from the founder, from father to sons, to the second generation, it says that only 30% of the family-owned businesses survive into the second generation. And only 13% survive into the third generation. The primary reason for failure in the transition of a business is a breakdown of trust and communication within the family unit. We were involved, couples were involved with a family business that had went from, oh, I don't know, it was probably at least into the, well, the uncles were involved, the founder was had passed on, the uncles were involved, a number of the nephews were involved, and some of the nieces were involved, and some of the family members that weren't involved in the business at all were owners, and it was quite a mess. Anyhow, that it gets more complicated. The further it goes and the more diverse it becomes, it gets more complicated. You know, brothers can agree to a certain point. Nephews agree less. That's why the third generation, you know, the second generation, only 30% survive. And I thought that's a low percentage, but I didn't go look, but there's a lot that only 30% into the second and 13% into the third generation. There was an example here. I have an example here. A family member transferred a farm to the next generation when he was 85 years old. Now, first of all, that was way too old. He transferred it until he was 85. Another case is where the dad had promised his two sons that he would transfer the family construction business to them, and he kept making this promise year after year after year. For almost 30 years, he kept saying, I'm going to do something. I'm going to get this done. We're going to transfer to use as my sons. Finally, when he was in his late 80s, and the sons were in their 60s, after the father had told them for 30 years that he's going to transfer to them, they went and filed suit against their father for a breach of contract. 1 week before the trial, they settled the case. So thankfully, they did settle the case 1 week before the trial. 2 weeks later, the father died. And that's a sad, sad ending there. There was another father who was in his 80s. He was in his 80s. He had called me and he said he wanted to do something. Of course, his sons were now in their 50s and 60s. And he said it's time that he does something. Well, it was time a long time already. So when is the right time? When do you start to transfer? There's a lot of sad stories out there of people that have left to go. In your 80s, it's plenty late. It's more by the time you're 60, or you should at least get things started in your 50s and keep working through that into your 60s and have it done by the time you don't know if you're going to be 70. So it's never too soon to start. You can make it pretty seamless if you start when you're at a younger age. Because one thing that happens, I think maybe I had that in my notes somewhere else, but one thing that happens, them sons, for those 30 years, they helped to build their father's business, and then they need to go and buy that out after they made it what it is, probably, more than likely. Hopefully they did if they were going to take it over. And then it was time for them to be doing the same thing, or they should have been starting already on theirs, but they were only getting it done. So it's never too early to start. I said I was involved in some sad stories. I've been involved with a lot of good stories, good things that have happened, good experiences. In the one case, one of the sad stories was where the sons and different ones walked out of the meeting. And, wasn't a good situation to be in at all. But I want to tell you, there's a lot of good things that do happen where family can sit down and they can talk about it. You know, that trust, I said the primary reason for failure is because there's a breakdown in trust and communication. And I think that's very, very true. So what are your goals in your transition? As you're thinking about transitioning, having a transition plan, what would be some of your goals? And I have some of them written down here. One of the main things you want to do is treat all children fairly, but not equally, not necessarily equally. If you can, you treat them equally. But I said, treat them fairly. You know, what is right for one may not be right for the other. They may not all be able to take over the business. They may not all want to be involved because some of them may be in states, number of states away. Or, you know, nowadays people live all over the world. And I guess they always did live all over the world, didn't they? But you know what I mean. They're around, transition all over the place. So you treat children fairly. And I don't think you can't always treat them equally. There's a difference between, and let's just say there's going to be one son that buys the business. And so what may be fair for him may not be fair for some of the other sons. Maybe some of the daughters are far away. They have no interest in the business. You need to treat the one that is buying the business, needs to be able to take over that business as you transition it to him. You don't want to transition something to him that is does not cash flow. And if you're going to treat everybody equally, it may not cash flow. There's that good possibility. So maybe we'll talk about that a little more later, but treat all the children fairly, but not necessarily equally. Make a list of the things that are important to you. What values do you want to transition to the next, in your business, to the next generation? That's really why you want to keep the business, or you want to keep it in the family. And maybe you don't. Maybe you want it to go somewhere else. But let's say when we're transitioning from father to the next generation, whoever that is. But make a list of the things that are important to you. More important than transferring the value or the value of the business is transferring your values that you have. What did you set out for? What is your mission? What is your vision for the business? Have a mission or a vision and a vision and a mission statement. You know, what do you really want to, what are your goals for your business? So make a list of the things that are important to you, the things that you want to see continue. And so it may not be that you want to transition to your children. It may be you want to transition to some employees or whoever that may be. So make a list of the things that are important. I want my oldest boys to take over the business, or I want each of my five children to be treated as equals as possible, including the in-laws. I talked about that a little bit. What about the children that are not working for the business? What do you want to see happen for them? To me, it would seem like you would, where your family's at, have your communication with your family. I did not transition the retail business to my children. I didn't do that. I sold it to some of my managers that worked for me for 30 years before that, and it's been probably 20 years now that they've been involved with the business. I had reasons why. I do have my wife and I, we would own some of the real estate, and we still rent the real estate to the corporation that runs the business. And there was just some of the, as I look down the road and some of the pressures and some of the things that are involved in business, we made the decision not to transition to the children. They understood that and they knew that. But in the real estate, you can treat all the children fair equally. So you can treat them all equally there. And it's a good way to do that. So we have the real estate, the partnership with the children. I have a 1% owner of that partnership is a corporation, which is myself. I'm the president and the secretary and the treasurer. No, I'm not sure what all. I'm mostly myself, owns 1%, which is the managing partner of the real estate. And so that's the way that's set up. At some point in time, you know, there needs to be executors appointed and all that. But that way, when our youngest daughter, Jody, she's been in Guatemala for the last 5.5 years, if we need to sign something legally, I can, as the 1% partner, I can sign for all the children. And she don't need to come home to sign and do things like that. So I can do transactions. So that 1% controls the other 99%, which the children are the greater part of that. So I could transition all that over to the children, and they can that can go on. And so that's that. My accountant helped me set that up probably 30 years ago. And maybe it's more than that. It's probably more than that. It's probably, I don't know when it was, 40 years maybe. But so that was a good way to transition and do, that was just another way to do it. I see I'm getting way behind here. Okay. Let me try and go over this, because I want to talk about evaluating your business and stuff a little bit. Let me go over this other. Okay, here's a question. How do you feel about just passing the business from generation to generation and never giving to charity the 20, 40% that you would like to see go there? You know, you keep transitioning the whole amount, and you transition to the next generation does to the next generation. And so you're not really ever supporting the charities with that money. That now I know, I understand, you can do it anytime, and you should be tithing all the time. Not just when, don't wait to do your tithing and giving to charity until you are out of this world, until you went to your heavenly home. Do that throughout your lifetime. This is just other things. This is beyond that. This is nothing to do with your tithing. Your tithing happens while you're living and while you're operating your business or your farming or your construction or whatever it is. Another question. What about paying off the business? You get it paid off, and then you pass on the next generation. They need to loan the debt again to pay it off again, and you go again, and you go again. And you never have the capital to make improvements. So you can make it that, you know, if you want to get the full value, and we'll talk about valuing a business. So what are some of the, just some things to think about? You never have the capital to make improvements that you should. What's the best age? It's different for different operations. You know, I know a man, a very wealthy man in our community years ago. He's passed on for a number of years. And my accountant worked with him and I worked with him as well. And he told me that man decided, you need to decide one of two things. That man decided that he is going to just plow ahead as fast as he can until he dies, and then it's going to be his children's problem. And I'm talking a large estate. And that's what he did. He plowed ahead. And his, you know, really, when you think about it, in your 60s, your 70s, hopefully your debts are paid, or at least a good part of them. You have more spendable cash than you had before. And if you want to just keep growing the business, if that's the type of business you're in. That's what he did. He just kept multiplying, and he must have grew more in the last 15 years than he did his whole lifetime. And he ended up with, when it was all said and done, after they passed away, it basically all got split up many umpteen ways, and no longer is. So that's the easiest thing to do is do nothing. So there's three exit plans, and that is, number one, plan to die on the job. You know, I guess that's, you can plan that way. I'm just going to keep going. I'm going to die on the job, and then it's not my problem. It's somebody else's. So that's the easiest to do. That's what that man did. He died on the job. Number two, you can sell to the highest bidder. That's a little harder, how to do all that and the tax consequences from that. Or number three, you can transition to family. And that's usually can be the most difficult. But generally, it's the most satisfying. So get assistance in how to do that. So what's your goal as you are going to transition? Let's say we're going to transition to the family. So what is your goal in doing that? Do you want to get as much for yourself as you can? Are you in it to see how much you can get for yourself? If you are, then don't start. If the seller and the and the buyer are all in it to get what's the best for them. Now, okay, you do want what is the best for you, but it may not be what is the highest number and all that. So what I'm saying, there is ways to do it that you may take a lesser amount and it'll still be the best thing that you did. There is ways to do that, and we'll talk about valuing. So what makes the most sense financially for the seller and the buyer? That's what you want to look at. The parents, as you're passing it on to your sons, what makes the most sense for them? Because all depends how you do it. Certain ways for them, certain things are more deductible as an expense, and for you, there's higher taxes. All depends how you do it. So, do you sell it for installment sale over a period of years? That's done a lot of times. How do you save the taxes? There was a banker told me that you need to, when you sell to your son, one of the first things you want to do, a farm or whatever it is, you want to, he said, you sell, let's take a dairy for illustration. You want to sell the cows to the son first. And maybe you as a dad, you keep owning the farm and you provide the feed. And you do that until the son owns the cows. And then you go to the next step and then you want to sell the farm. You want to transition maybe the equipment next and then the farm. And you do it over a period of years so that you, as a dad, you do have an income for a number of years as you sell the real estate at the end. So first of all, you need to transfer to the son the thing that makes the cash flow. It wouldn't help for him to own the farm first because that don't cash flow. More than likely, without cows, without chickens, or without whatever, the farm won't cash flow. So you can't really sell the farm to him first. So you sell to him what makes the cash flow, or the carpenter business. And then maybe you sell the tools or whatever later, however that is. So you sell the farm, the cash flow first, and then you figure out the price it needs to be for that cash flow to happen. And that may not be equal to the rest of the children of what that price is, because it may go, if you want to go to appraised value today, if you want to go to the value of farms today, it's kind of, it gets out of reach. So what do you want? Are there other goals more important to me than income? Like being a witness to the community, helping others, relationships in the family. The hardest step is getting started. There's usually no sense of urgency to start the process, but don't delay. Is a large windfall wise for the children? Should you set a limit? Some people believe you should set a limit. Only so much goes to the children, and then after that, everything goes to charity. We'll let you decide that, what's best. And that varies from situation to situation. So have a partnership, have a LLC for real estate and that type of thing. You can work all that out as you transition. But keep current buy and sell agreements. Keep operational agreements. You need to have agreements if something happens to one of the, I'm involved with different partnerships and you have your buy-sell agreements. What if something happens to one of the owners? What are you going to do? How are you going to support the widow? What are you going to do there? And have a book value. Every year we have a book value in the partnerships, what the value of the company is. And if somebody, we agree at a business meeting, we agree to what that value will be. If something happens in the next year, that is what amount of percentage of shares you have. That is what you will get. And so you can't make that percentage too high because then they'll want to sell. So, it keeps you balanced. It really does keep you balanced. To go get a book value, determine your value each year. What is your book value? Your book value is after depreciation and then what are your amount of shares and divide that by that. And that's what, if you own 100 shares, that's what you get. You can always, always live above your agreement. If all the partners that are left agree to go beyond the agreement because of the situation of the widow, of the person, the one partner that has passed away, you can go beyond. You can't go less, but you can go beyond. Just like the discipline in your church. You can live beyond the discipline, but it's a minimum standard whereby it all equals out. And you can, if something happens to, like I said, to a partner, you can go beyond that. And your book value may be times two, or it may be times three or four. You determine that, or one and a half. You determine that every year, what that's going to be, so that if something happens in the next year, you know what you're going to, what it's going to be. Can I take a few minutes yet? Okay. I'm keeping you from playing, I think, young people. So I just want to, how we evaluate a business. Okay, there's about, I have four things written down here. When you want to sell a business, when you want to transition a business, you need to evaluate that. And this is basically how we as advisors, how we look at it. And like I said, no one thing is the right thing for every situation. First of all, if there's property involved, you get appraisals. That's pretty cut and dry. You get appraisals for what the, and you come to an agreed upon price, and that gives you a value for that part of the business. We work with a lot of times we encourage the business to, if they're trying to transition part of it to some of their employees or a son, we keep the real estate separate. The parents, they keep owning the real estate, and they rent that real estate to the son. So number two is equipment. So that's another part of it, is equipment. What equipment is involved? What all vehicles, equipment, if it's retail, your freezers, your coolers, your, you know, just anything, your tools, whatever it is. You get a value, an appraisal on that equipment. Even if it's fully depreciated on your books, you need to have a value. If it's fully depreciated, the owner's going to, when he's the seller, is going to pay taxes on that. That's just the way it is. So he can decide if he wants to keep it a little less or more. They agree upon an appraised value for the equipment. There again, you get the appraisal, you can go under it. You can decide to sell it for less than that. The dad can decide he wants less because it will cost him taxes. Inventory is very easy. That's always cost. It's cost. It's just what it is. And if you were doing your taxes the way you should have been doing them throughout your lifetime, you would not owe any taxes on inventory because you already paid taxes on that year by year if it's listed. You know, if it's $100,000 for your inventory, if that's what you have it at on your books, that's what you pay taxes on, you can get that $100,000 or $200,000, and it's no cost. No cost to you. Now, if you have a lot of outdated inventory, then you want to go for, you know, less than value and stuff like that. But usually it's cost, whatever your cost is. Now, the hard one is the last one, and that is, how do you value the business? Or how do you come up with an amount for the blue sky? When we talk about the blue sky, that is what the business is worth. That could be your customer list, just what it's worth, what it took to build that over the years. And this one is a little tougher. And this is usually that takes the longest. You look at all your payables, you look at your receivables, you got to balance all them out, you got to take that all into consideration, your debts, if there are any debts, any loans, what is there, you got to get to a net. So you take what we do normally is we ask for the last 3 years of your tax return. Sometimes five, if you're a business that really varies a lot. But normally 3 years, your last 3 years, we get your tax return and we get it all figured out down to the net profits. That's you know, not with your depreciation. You got to take depreciation into consideration. You got to take your owner's draws. Make sure the owner's draws are included. You know, some guys show a lot of, some people like to milk their business, keep it as low as, pay as little tax as they can for all their years. And then they say, well, next year I'm going to sell. So this year I'm going to make my tax return show a lot of income so I get a higher amount for my business. That's why we take 3 years or 5 years, because it averages out. You take the average of them 3 or 5 years. So we get to the net, and I won't take the time to go into all that, but we get to the bottom, make sure everything's in there. The owner's draws are expensed, the distribution, that's all, it's all in there. They're not keeping some of that out because the new owner, he needs to pay himself as well. So we get to a net, and then we take that average of the last 3 years, and we come up with the price, and it's $100,000 again, and then you, all depends what for business it is. You will take that, just that face value, or you may go times two or three. Some businesses that are more not usually in retail. Maybe 2%, two times or so. Whatever that amount is, you take it times two or three, whatever you decide there, and that is what you get for the blue sky. And then the seller, he likes to get that amount for the blue sky, but guess what? That's all income to him. And he pays taxes on all of that. And that is very slow expense on the seller's part. So it hurts the most, the blue sky. It is what it is. But you can rent, you know, pay rent. And so you want to determine what is best for the seller and the buyer. And, you know, not one fits all, but just do something. May the Lord bless you.